Hello, everybody. This is Katie Lear. I am your convention coordinator, and welcome to the Democracy Live session this afternoon at 3 o'clock. And we're in Jacksonville, Florida, and we're very lucky to enjoy this freezing cold air conditioning because it's 96 degrees
Wow.
outside. I'd like to thank ACB Media for letting us have two of their Zoom rooms so that we can have our convention. It's been so helpful and so wonderful. Joyce Feinberger's our room opener and monitor. Our host is Allison Smitherman. Our streamer is Larry Gassman. And Ryan Cordell is in our room here, manning our Zoom board. I'd like to introduce Leslie Spoon, and she's going to introduce Charlie Kenyon and his Democracy Live buddies. Go for it, Leslie.
All right, thank you, Katie, and thank you to Democracy Live for being one of our silver sponsors this year for the Florida Council of the Blind Convention again. We really, really appreciate them and all their hard work, Charlie, Michelle, and Brian, and the whole team. So thank you, Charlie, and take it away.
No, that's great. Thank you very much. We are so pleased to be here and to be able to share an hour with you all. My name is Charlie Kinnoon. I serve as Director of Education for Democracy Live. We are lucky, also lucky enough to have our CEO and founder, Brian Finney, who just walked in the door, and we're side by side here. So he wanted a chance to pay a visit with you all and give you a little feel for what we're doing, what Democracy Live is doing in Florida, and our relationship with the Florida Council of the Blind. I've also invited a couple, three very important partners that Democracy Live has forged with Terrence Page, a gentleman from New York City. A very active advocate there in that state, in that city. We also have Nona Horoyan from Massachusetts, who will spend also a few minutes with us talking about things in Massachusetts and their voting tool, accessible voting tool. And then we have Curtis Chong from Colorado, who will also spend a little bit of time talking about what's going on in Colorado. So we are represented by a number of people from around the country, and we'll listen to their stories and their experiences with working with other groups. As you know, the premise of our talk today is building bridges through accessible voting. And I've been with the company now for 10 years, so one decade. So I've been working with folks in Florida for quite a while. Democracy Live views the Florida Council of the Blind as one of the strongest advocacy groups and affiliates, in the country. We really appreciate the work that you do, the time and the effort that you put in, and we listen to you. I think it was Curtis the other day when we were talking. Curtis is from Colorado, and he said, "Charlie, you need to make sure that people know that Democracy Live are experts in non-visual access." And it kind of made me feel good because we are experts. Over the years, we have really made this. It is our mission. It's why we are a company. It's why we do what we do. And it made me feel good when Curtis brought that up, and I started thinking, well, why are we experts in this field? And the reason is because we ask you. You are the experts, and we listen. We're just really good listeners, and we have really good developers who take what you tell us, and we forge them into tools that make your voting experience a great experience. So, as Director of Education, my paramount duty is to engage the users around the country, and I spend time every day, every week, touching base with voters around the country to find out what your needs and wants are. And then we try to respond. And we're lucky enough to be able to do that. And we meet so many great people around the country. And many of them are right here in this group. So we want to thank you for being here. What I'd really like to be able to do now is pass this off to our CEO and founder of Democracy Live, He'll spend a few minutes with you talking about, you know, what we're doing in Florida right now, what we're doing around the country. And then we'll go to Nona and Terrence and Curtis. So thank you all again for coming here. We appreciate it. We are going to have a question and answer time afterward for quite some time. We'd love to be able to hear your questions. We value what you have to say. We'd love to hear your input, and hopefully we'll be able to give you some answers. And if you come away with this, after our hour, if you come away with one thing that'll help your cause in spreading the word of electronic ballot return and delivery, we'd love to hear from you. So, Brian, why don't you take it from here? And here's a Florida Council of the Blind.
Fantastic. Good afternoon, everybody. It's really an honor to be with you all here today, primarily because we're coming in from soggy Seattle, Washington. So this is an opportunity for us to live a little vicariously through sunny Florida down there. So thank you for that opportunity and congratulations on your 2025 Florida Council of the Blind Conference. Very excited to be able to help be a sponsor here, but also more importantly, to have this conversation here this afternoon. As Charlie mentioned, we have an opportunity here to spend some time with you all and help both educate, but also importantly, listen you all at the conference to ensure that we are all kind of rowing in the same direction in terms of access and ballot access. You know, I know this is an off year. It's not as hot of a topic as it was this time last year, heading into the presidential election. But this is the time, you know, during the downtime in elections to do all the hard work, right? This is where all the blocking and tackling of getting ready for the next big election, which is not too far away, 2026. Just ripped from this morning's headlines, right? We know the importance of our voices being heard and all of our voices being heard in our democratic process. As we all know, you know, voting is the foundation of our democracy. It's the direction of our country. And so it matters. And I just want to just highlight the fact that the Florida Council of the Blind and the members within Florida specifically have been on the forefront of voting and balloting access to make sure that everybody can vote privately and independently. We're all around the country. You know, I just got in yesterday from Louisiana, right? Before that, we're up in Anchorage and all over the country. And you may not know this, but it was Florida that really was a key catalyst in leadership to be able to extend voting to all voters, regardless of disabilities, to be able to vote where you want to vote. And that could be at your home or it could be back in the polling place. But just like every other voter in Florida has the opportunity to be able to decide for yourself where you want to vote, that needed to be extended to voters that are print challenged. And you all did that starting about, I don't know, 6 years ago now, I think. And so much of the rest of the country followed your lead. Of course, it is Florida. It's Florida elections. Mm-hmm. And ever since the Gore Bush election of 2000, Florida has been on the forefront in elections. And so, you know, all around the country, I hear like, well, what are they doing in Florida? And when we're able to say that Florida now extends access to voting beyond the polling place and into the home through an accessible voting experience, you know, that makes a big difference around the rest of the country. So it's not just in Florida, but it's the ripple effect that you have all had in terms of leadership and access to voting all around the country. You know, the old adage, if you can make it in Florida elections, you can make it anywhere. And that's what's been happening. Now, that being said, and what we're talking about, of course, is Democracy Live is one of a few providers in Florida that provide the tool, the ability for you all to be able to get a link and access an accessible balloting portal is really what it is. I don't want to speak too much for our friends who are our friendly competitors, but we're all in it for the same purpose, and that is to make sure that everybody has access to the ballot, regardless of the technology or the provider. We want to make sure that every voter in all 67 counties is fully covered. But in general, the process works that you would put in a request to your local elections official. They would then send you a link to the accessible ballot. at which point you would go through that process of engaging with the tool, with this technology, and using your screen reader, you would be able to navigate your way through the ballot after you put in your credentials, like first, last, date of birth. You'd be able to listen to the ballot, very similar to what if you went to the polling location and were able to put on the headphones at the voting location or other accessible devices and mark your ballot. You can now do that at home, which is great. It's a huge, huge first step to be able to access your ballot. But we're only halfway there. You know, Charlie here is long time football coach, right? And you know, it's good to get down the field, but if you only make it past the 50-yard line, you haven't scored the touchdown yet. And you know, I think we're making good progress marching down the field, but as of now, I think we're still at the 50-yard line in Florida. And really the touchdown, the ultimate goal is to make sure that all voters are able to access their ballot privately and independently without requiring a printer, requiring inaccessible final solutions in terms of having to print the ballot and get an envelope, get a stamp, and mail it back in. So as of now, based on state kind of constraints, you can get your ballot, but then you have to print it and then mail it back in. So we've been working diligently. In fact, I'm leaving on Sunday to go down to Orlando to the Florida Council for the Blind. I'm sorry, the Florida County Council for elections. It's their big annual elections conference down there on Monday. And we'll be talking to the Secretary of State's office. We'll be talking with other county representatives who run elections about making sure that we do the entire experience, which means electronic ballot delivery as well as electronic ballot return. And that's really the holy grail, right? That's where we want to get to. We're doing it. Democracy Live! Is doing that in about 20% of the states. A handful of years ago, it wasn't any state. So we're starting to make really strong progress. And definitely Florida is top of mind in terms of making sure that you can access your phone at home or wherever you want to, or your computer, your device, access your ballot, mark it, review it, listen to it, and then electronically submit your ballot back to the elections office entirely privately, entirely independently. And again, it's been working all around the country. It's a technology that exists and been proven. And so that's really what we are hoping to do. And of course, we can't do that and deploy this technology without your support, without your education, back to the elections offices, back to the state legislature, back to the Secretary of State's office, to really mobilize and hopefully galvanize this effort to go all the way down the field, you know, score that touchdown in terms of making sure that you can do the balloting experience, both ballot delivery, which is what you have today, but also what they call electronic ballot return. And that'll only happen with your voices. That'll only happen, you know, with your kind of mobilization and making sure that this issue is heard in Tallahassee. It's heard at the Secretary of State's office. It's heard by the governor that you really demand to have equal access to voting. It exists. It's a technology that's available. And as of now, electronic return of the ballot in Florida is taking place. But it's for those that are in the military or those that are traveling or living abroad. So electronic return of the ballot is something that's happening right now in Florida. It's just reserved only for those that are overseas. So, you know, this is really just extending what already is taking place in Florida for a certain set of voters and extending it to voters, you know, who could really benefit from it domestically. And those are people that can't necessarily see the ballot or hold a pen or have a printer. So again, I want to thank you for the opportunity to listen to you all here today. I'm going to turn it back over to Charlie, and I'm here to listen. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate it.
Great. Thank you, Brian. I appreciate that. Next thing that we will do is pass this on to Nona Heroyan from Massachusetts. She has great success stories of the bridges that they have built from the Bay State Council of the Blind, another strong organization in the American Council of the Blind network. We really appreciate the work that we do. Nona communicates with us and lets us know what's going on, and we sure appreciate her. And I'll let her take it from here, because she is, her organization has really done a nice job of being successful in building bridges with other advocacy groups, because that's what it's going to take. So Nona, if you can take it from here and let everybody know a little bit about Massachusetts and EBR.
Thank you, Charlie. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for this opportunity you've given us to speak about this issue. As Charlie said, I'm from Massachusetts, but I serve as the co-chair of the Advocacy Committee for the Bay State Council of the Blind, BSCB, along with my co-chair, Jerry Berrier. So today I'm really happy to be able to share how BSCB collaborated with partners to secure accessible electronic vote by mail ballots in Massachusetts. You know, our journey to our success was pretty complex. It involved two major legal battles, five BSCB members who agreed to be plaintiffs in those legal battles, and it ultimately concluded in a settlement with the Secretary of State. So briefly, in 2020, during the height of the pandemic, voting access became a major concern for blind and low vision voters in Massachusetts. Like most states, vote by mail was rapidly expanding. Paper ballots excluded voters who couldn't independently mark, verify, and cast their vote privately. That's when BSCB collaborated and really, I should say, joined forces with the amazing Disability Law Center and the Boston Center for Independent Living. Together, we worked to make our voices heard, emphasizing that accessible voting isn't just an issue of convenience, but it's a civil rights issue. This collaboration led to legal advocacy that resulted in a temporary relief in 2020, an electronic vote-by-mail option for voters with disabilities. While this was a breakthrough, we knew we couldn't stop there. So for the next 2 years, we worked to make this solution permanent. And I'm really proud to say that in June of 2022, Massachusetts overwhelmingly passed legislation making accessible electronic vote by mail a permanent choice, utilizing Democracy Live! Software. As the co-chair of the Advocacy Committee, our role is to continue this momentum. You know, we are really committed to making sure our members are aware and informed of their voting rights. You know, we share information about elections, legislative developments. You know, we provide tools and training to help our members participate fully in civic life. Because advocacy is ongoing work, we listen to our members' feedback, stay in touch with policymakers, and continue to build strong relationships with other disability groups. I just want to say to our friends here in Florida, know that you're not alone in this fight. You know, every state's journey is different. And I hope that the stories and struggles and successes that we can share will help build, you know, stronger and a more inclusive democracy for us all together. You know, I look forward to answering any questions about our system, our fully accessible system in Massachusetts. And I thank you for your time and interest. Back to you, Charlie.
Great. Thank you, Nona. We appreciate that. Just a quick little recap. We believe that Massachusetts right now has kind of the Cadillac of systems in the country right now for voters with disabilities. And we're excited, and you know, we're going to help every single affiliate across the country reach kind of the pinnacle of that system. So thank you, Nona. Appreciate that. Next up, And while we're going through this, if you guys would think about questions that you may have, and we'll ask at the end. So next up, we have Terrence Page from New York. Terrence, tell us a little bit about yourself and where you guys are in the process of getting this same legislation passed and the hurdles that you are coming up against. So Terrence, take it from here.
Oh, thank you, Charlie. Thank you, Nona. Thank you, Brian. Hello, Florida. I'm Terrence Page, president of the Greater New York Council of the Blind. Right now I'm speaking as myself, not as a president, but we at Greater New York Council of the Blind, we in our state have been trying to get electronic ballot return for a while. Our forces, I am personally a member of the League of Women Voters, the NAACP, Common Cause, and about seven other organizations that I'm connected to. We are trying to make, my goal is to get these groups to recognize disabled persons and our struggle to vote. We want to let them know that they are people trying to hold back our right to vote. Electronic ballot return is something that shouldn't even be thought about. Every major disability group in the country supports electronic ballot return. In our state, we are running into a war with Common Cause and the League of Women Voters. They want to say that electronic ballot return has security issues. It doesn't. They're not recognizing our struggle that we sometimes can't get out. Myself, a kidney transplant. We can't always make it to the polls. This gives us access to the ballot. Give us liberty or give us death. We need this. And I keep explaining the Common Cause and the League of Women Voters, which I've been a member of for at least 3 to 4 years, how much we need them, and explain the plight of blind and disabled people who have print disabilities. And their common refrain is, we don't know it's safe. We don't know it's safe. And we've explained to them about the security measures taken forth by Democracy Live to make this the most secure voting system in the world. They just want to stay the old way. There are many bills we're trying to stop where they're trying to make print ballots the standard. If we get print ballots, we can never move forward. ACB National is behind electronic ballot return. We are the disability community. We are in control of our future. We want to vote. We are just as good. We pay taxes. We're veterans. We do everything they do. If it wasn't for the disability community, certain companies would be out of business, such as Apple. We put Apple back in the market. There's a short little story I want to tell you. When Apple was failed a second time, because of voiceover, blind people bought hundreds of iPhones, and we saved Apple. We have power. We have money. We have influence. We need to be treated like human beings who can vote whenever we want to, and that we have the rationale, the logic to explain our situation better than anyone. We here at the Greater New York Council of the Blind and the State of New York have, and several other disability organizations such as Downstate Adapt and others, and I'm a member of so many. But Common Cause and the League of Women Voters, and I'm on their diversity committee, are holding this back. We have a state of 19 million people trying to. Those persons, most of them have never met a disabled person. They don't know why we vote, and we have to teach them. We have to work and join other groups. Get in there. See how their policies work, how they communicate, and let them see you, identify you, and know our struggle. We have the power, the money, the strength. We will get electronic ballot return. We need this. It is something that desperately needed for people who can't go out and vote, who don't have a printer. This must happen. I think Florida is a coxswain, a turning point, a key point in helping us go forward. If you guys need any help and we're willing to talk, any questions about our struggles and what we're going through, we in New York are up against the wall. We will not lay down. We will always get up and keep fighting. We will not let this pass. We're pushing our legislators, Every civic organization we could join, we join. We don't work from the outside. We work from the inside. We become one of them. So they're talking, they're like, well, you're the first one we ever met. Yes. That's how we're going to get it done. And I thank Charlie and I thank Florida for listening to us. Thank you very much. And remember your strength and power when you go out there. Thank you.
That's outstanding, Terrence. Thank you. And your passion comes through loud and clear, no doubt about it, as does Nona's. We really appreciate that. Next up, we have Curtis Chong for the great state of Colorado. He has also spent, I met Curtis a number of years ago when he was in New Mexico, and I also know that he's from Iowa as well. So he has experience around the country, knows the country well, and we'll talk a little bit about the bridge building they have done in Colorado, as well as the differing systems that Colorado has over others. And you know, he'll allow us to, he'll let us know, you know, how systems are a little bit different from state to state, municipality to municipality. So Curtis, take it from here. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Florida. So let me first of all say that electronic ballot return as a concept, which is the ability to have the ballot that we have marked on the technologies we use with which we are most familiar. Everybody that you ask, it doesn't really matter what party they belong to. It doesn't really matter what groups they belong to. They're going to tell you when you confront them with this issue, they're going to say, we really don't have anything against people with disabilities voting accessibly. But what you people with disabilities may not understand is how unsafe and insecure the business of transmitting your ballot is when you push it back into the system to have it counted. Now, there is a certain amount of, I think, irrationality involved behind this issue, because those people who are arguing against electronic ballot return feel that they are justified in letting us know that that is a hugely, that electronic ballot return is a hugely insecure, subject to all kinds of risk. And honestly, I think people feel about electronic ballot return the same way they feel about people who are blind or who have a disability if they come from an unenlightened segment of the population. We all know, I don't care which organization you belong to, whether you're ACB or NFB or nothing, that a lot of blind, the characteristic of blindness and low or low vision is one that is fraught with a lot of misconception and stereotypical thinking. There's an immediate reaction that a lot of uninformed people have that says, because you cannot see or because your vision is very poor, you are necessarily less able, less capable, and all of that, as compared to other more fortunate, that's their quotes, not mine, members of society who have fully normal vision. Well, I'm here to tell you that electronic ballot return is a concept that is wrapped up in a lot of the same knee-jerk reflex reaction of, I'm going to oppose it immediately because people have been yelling and screaming that this is not secure. That's what they're going to say to us. Now, when we first started in Colorado to promote the idea of electronic ballot return, we thought we could get away with having it available just only to people with disabilities as defined by the Americans with Disabilities Act, which would include a lot of people, like if you're in a wheelchair or if you have, let's say you have perfectly good willing hands and perfectly vision, but you know, if you have another thing that's called a disability. And that was when people like the League of Women Voters and Common Cause got up and said, no, no, that's not a good idea. So in the end, we wound up compromising by saying, well, what if we said that this electronic ballot return process was going to be available just to people who have a print disability? And this is the same print disability thing that qualifies you for service from the Library of Congress, the National Library Service, or from your regional library for the blind. That means that it's not just blind people, it's people who have dyslexia and can't really process print visually, or it's people who have a physical problem with their hands that doesn't enable them to do that, to pick up the physical ballot and to write on that ballot, even if they can see it perfectly. These are well-established criteria. And once we did that, then pretty much the groups like the League of Women Voters were willing to compromise. Let me say that in the notion of building bridges, it's not that we want to build bridges necessarily only to people who oppose the concept of electronic ballot return. It's that we want to build bridges with people in, especially the state legislature, who have influence, whom we feel we have a high likelihood of being able to persuade to join our push for accessible ballot return systems that work. And, you know, what we don't really talk about too often, but ought to talk about, is that what are the alternatives to electronic ballot return? Well, one, you get a friend or a not so friend or a frenemy or whatever to help you mark the printed ballot if you're in a vote by mail state. Number two, you go to the polls, and because we have the Help America Vote Act, which says they have to have accessible equipment, then you have this system that you only touch once every year, if you're lucky. And so you don't really have a chance to practice on the system. And some of these accessible voting systems, so-called, at the polls, have, if you compare them with the kind of speech that you can get on your smartphone or on your computer at home, that speech is inferior, it's slow, it's choppy, it can't be speeded up. And so non-visual users like us who use screen readers every day, we don't really like to use those systems for two reasons. One, because the speech is not the best necessarily. And number two, because we're not really familiar, haven't had a chance to practice their use. So I think we are not asking for something. I think it's very clear we have to say to people, we're asking for something that for us is an absolute necessity. We need this. And let's get real and talk about, what are the security implications of electronic ballot return? How long does the ballot stay out in the real world where some unethical person can get a copy of my ballot and so they can know how I voted? And let's compare that process with, let's say, vote by mail, where you fill out the form, you sign the form, you put it in an envelope. The envelope now leaves your hands, goes into the mailbox, and that envelope travels circuitously from your house through the postal system into the whole paper processing mill of your county. And it's sitting out there in an unsecure fashion for days at a time, as opposed to the electronic, which goes vroom, and it's in the system right away. So not that we've done anything great, because our system in Colorado, which is a system where you don't even have to request in advance for the right to use it. You just go to a website, identify yourself, and get your ballot in and delivered. It is much more complex than it needs to be. You got to download two files, the ballot and the ballot packet, and then you got to upload three files, which is the ballot packet, and a picture of some form of authorized identification. Some people find this process way too complex. And for every election that we've run 8 or 9 of these in the last 3 years in Colorado. I usually write up a set of instructions that I widely circulate to explain to people how the system works, how they can use it, written from the point of view of a screen reader user. I can tell you that the people who work for the counties and the state government have no knowledge or experience on how to do that. So in the end, what I'm saying is some of the friends that you want to make could be with Common Cause or the League of Women Voters, which are the people we know of in some places who have opposed us and in other places have supported us. But you also want to try to find relationships within the legislature and figure out who the influential people are and try to persuade them to join our effort to make this successful. Because already it's good enough right now for people who vote overseas. Why isn't it good enough for people with disabilities? And I will be happy after this to entertain any questions that I'm capable of answering from the audience. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. I appreciate your time and your attention to this important matter. That's usually how I close all my letters. Thank you.
Thank you, Curtis. Outstanding as usual. Appreciate your experience and all of that. And, you know, at this point in time, I think that we would like to kind of open it up. It is a question and answer period. We'd love to hear your answer, your questions, and to see if we can answer it, or any kind of input you might have. You might have some input for Terrence and Nona and Curtis, as well as Brian and myself. So if you have a question, please answer away.
We have no raised hands in Zoom so far.
Okay.
Do we have any questions in the room?
Why don't we take a second here? Nona, would you mind taking a few minutes and explaining? You know, I go around the country and talk about the Cadillac of systems residing in Massachusetts. What do I mean by that when I say that? Could you share that with us?
Sure. The more I hear about other states' situation, I realize how incredibly fortunate we are in Massachusetts. So even the system of voting in the polls, you know, in our state, there is only one voting marking device throughout the state, and that's the AutoMark, which is, you know, for us, it's almost 20 years old, and it's still working. It's a tough machine, but so we have that one system, and now here we have the ability to, you know, we receive, it's done so incredibly well. Like I can't even stress this. So, you know, you request an accessible ballot. And it is relegated to people who do have a print disability, just like Curtis was talking about. You request the ballot. Your city clerk sends you an email. The email includes the ballot. And then you get a second email that has your own personal PIN code. And that is the code that you will put in when you go into the link to get your ballot. And once you put that in, your ballot is opened for you. You vote. You do an electronic signature, and you have the ability, if you choose to want to mail your vote in or just submit electronically. And it is so seamless and so easy. And on the other end, for our city clerk's office, when they've created a portal for themselves, and they see as these ballots are coming in, our city clerk, we have a really great relationship with the staff, and they've made it very clear that, you know, they kind of wait, they look at the portal and say, oh, we've got several ballots are in, and they go in and they print them. These ballots look identical to all ballots in the Commonwealth. And then they are tabulated, just like every ballot is tabulated in the Commonwealth. They look identical. And that is something that we're, as we're going forward and looking at a replacement for our auto marks, we want to maintain our standard. We don't want to take a step back and let municipalities choose different systems. We want to continue with what we have. But I realize how fortunate we are. And it is such, I can't even stress how seamless and easy it is. We've never had an issue with Common Cause or League of Women Voters. In fact, our Disability Law Center has a really great relationship with both organizations. And it's really upsetting to hear what other states are going through and experiencing. So, I mean, I just know that, we also had a relatively easy and quick process getting this legislation passed. I was just looking at the numbers, and you know, we have 42 senators, and 37 were a yes. And same thing in the House. It was overwhelmingly, supported. And that makes for us as a disability community, feel very appreciated and understood. So that's our experience.
Great. Thank you, Nona. And Common Cause and the League of Women Voters, were they involved with you? Did you work with them at all?
We have not, Charlie. We have never had private dealings with either of them one-on-one. We've always worked with like the Disability Law Center, who has these really great relationships with them. But no, certainly no legislation in any way that was trying, I should say, any kind of litigation against us in any way. So it was, you know, I had the fortune of being at a meeting with Terrence several months ago, and Tatum Pritchard, who was the director of litigation for the Disability Law Center and is an amazing warrior for us. And when she heard that, she was stunned herself because her experience is so different with both of those organizations.
Yes.
May I say something?
Sure.
We've met with Common Cause, personally on a one-on-one level, to try to get them to change their mind with Susan Lerner. And they've come to us and asked us to support certain legislation. And most of them, we're lockstep. But except for this one issue, they're just holding back on us. That's one issue they're, again, as Curtis said so eloquently, they're the whole security issue. We've tried to get them to meet. We're trying to get them to meet with Democracy Live so they can explain this to them. And we're still working on it. They're trying to change our opinion, and we're trying to bring them to the table. The League of Women Voters, they believe, both of these organizations believe, that paper ballots are the gold standard. But they don't take into account that we can't see them. They just won't. And if we adopt paper ballot mandate, which are several bills that are being pushed in our state legislation, we will never upgrade. That would mean we would always have to use auto marks, which we also use auto mark in New York City, which we love, but we will never go to electronic ballot return if paper ballots become the mandate. And that
is,
excuse me,
Daryl. Yeah,
go ahead. I'm sorry. You have a question?
I yield the floor to the gentleman from New York. But I want to add something about paper ballots when you're done.
Yeah, but we're not trying to take away the paper ballot. That's not what we're trying to do. We're trying to open the access to those of us who can't use the paper ballot. That's my end. Thank you for listening.
Thanks, Terrence. Curtis, did you want to say something?
We have in Colorado also a mandate for paper ballots, right? It's, in other words, what are the ballots that actually get counted? What ballots actually get counted are the actual paper ballots. Even if you do an electronic ballot return, somebody somewhere on the back end goes ahead and prints them. And I think that if you're going to get into nuances with the people who say, you know, there's nothing wrong with a paper ballot mandate, really, in the sense that the ballots that ultimately get counted, it's okay to say that those have to be paper ballots. It's the method of how the ballots are created that needs to be pushed aside when you're negotiating. And I realize, Daryl, you have a tough road to hoe because you're not able to be rational. All right, the arguments against this for New York are not necessarily rational. Remember how long we have all been fighting to elevate the perception of blind people in our country forever, and it seems like, you know, it never changes. And so I regret to say that sometimes it's a visceral reaction that has nothing to do with logic. And maybe, you know, we're always wanting to talk logic with them, but what is the pivot? What would it be? And I don't know the answer, but my mind is already chunking away at this thinking, what is the one thing that we could say to them? You know, to me, it's like, when I first got wind that the League of Women Voters in Colorado were against our effort, I thought to myself, here's a group that's supposed to be promoting access to voting. They go, you know, they're supposed to be regarded as impartial. And as we found out, they're not impartial. They have opinions. And so we have to figure out, okay, what argument can we make, whether it's rational or not, that will cause them to change their opinion to the point where they won't become a roadblock? And that is a tough question to answer, but it needs to have some thought. Because remember, a lot of times, this has nothing to do with logical thinking. It's all about emotional responses. So I think in Colorado, at least, our Common Cause, League of Women Voters, the legislature, they understand that Colorado is a paper ballot state. That's why we have vote by mail. But we have been fortunate that the prejudice against EBR has been weakened to the point where overseas voters and the print disabled can use the same system to mark and deliver their ballots electronically with, may I say, We haven't had a single major security incursion happen with this system. And I think historical, you know, if you look at the 10 or 12 states that use electronic ballot return, somebody should be pulling out the data saying, well, how many times have they had a security issue? My answer is pretty close to zero, pretty close to zero.
Yeah. I was gonna reiterate that as well, Curtis, to say that certainly from New York, to point, you know, you point out the states that it's working in and that it's successful, and then they can take a look and see that we haven't had security breaches. Certainly not in Massachusetts.
Exactly. The this is Terrence Page again. The 13 states where it is, where it's active, no issue. We have it here in New York where we can receive the ballot electronically, but we can't return it.
Right.
So a person who is print disabled would have to print it out, put it in an oath envelope, sign it, and walk it to the mailbox. That defeats the whole purpose, because most blind and visually impaired persons don't own printers.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, you know, when we first, our very first year, 2020, when we had that temporary relief, it wasn't so much to print the ballot. What they said was, yeah, you could do that. But they also created an ability, like you had to create your ballot as a PDF, and then you had to add it as an attachment and send it as an email to the city clerk's office. And wow. For some of our members, that was a little more technical than they knew how to do. But luckily, you know, that was not with Democracy Live. And now we have Democracy Live, and that's not the system we have. So.
Thank you. I think if there aren't any questions out there, butt in if you have a question or a comment, we'd appreciate that. But Brian, our CEO, would like to share some more with you. So Brian?
Sure. Thanks, Charlie. And thanks again for all the comments here today and taking down some notes and making my own personal comments in terms of what I can take away from this meeting here today. But I'll just share again, I think Charlie mentioned how Massachusetts has been kind of the Cadillac standard in terms of how you went about getting it passed. And that's really hopefully the takeaway from this discussion here today, which is it would not have happened without NONA and the Bay State Council of the Blind and other activists and in some cases antagonists, right? Getting up there and saying, no, we demand this, right? And it was that combination of kind of the quiet, I don't want to say threat, but just the reality that, you know, this is the law. Equal access to voting is part of the Americans with Disabilities Right. It's a matter of obeying what is already on the books with the National Voting Rights Act. So when you look at laws around the country, it was a combination of we can get it done through litigation or legislation. And what they ended up doing in Massachusetts was it was legislation with maybe a hint of,
yeah.
I don't want to speak for you, Nona, but
no, it was litigation.
and we've seen that, right? You know, Indiana just turned on this system. North Carolina, a federal judge ruled that, you know, this is the law. So far, for what we've seen around the country, it's been pretty much 100% successful where when there has been a lawsuit, and we're not encouraging lawsuits at all. Just this is kind of more of it's always better to go through the legislative process. And for those of you in Florida, you know, that is the process, is to speak and educate your local legislators and remind them that this is an issue. And I used to work back in the Senate back in D.C. years ago. And my great takeaway there was I remember a U.S. senator, and I was just some lowly staffer. And at the end of the day, the senator had asked me to go into the office and tell him how many people, you know, would back then it was letters, right, or faxes, right, mm-hmm. or phone calls on a particular issue. And it would be like six people versus three people. But that 6-3 made a difference for this U.S. senator. And I've seen that all around the country, that a small but vocal minority of voters who really believed in something can absolutely affect change. Because they don't hear from constituents all too often. You might think that they do, but they really don't, much less on an issue of this kind of importance. So I would just encourage those in Florida here to speak up, to reach out to your local representative, to speak to your Secretary of State. Make this an issue. I think that there's, especially in Florida, you all aren't shy down there. Maybe it's the sun. Maybe it's the vitamin. Was it vitamin B? D?
D.
Whatever it is, we don't get enough of it up here.
We don't get enough of it up here, yeah.
And just like you've done in Massachusetts and other states, West Virginia is doing this. Alabama's doing, not for those voters with disabilities, but electronic return is being done all around the country. And then finally, I'll just say that, there has been, unfortunately, mostly at the national leadership between Common Cause and the League of Women Voters, which is ironic. In theory, they are a proponent for broader access to voting, except for this one issue. I would encourage you all, if you are in discourse with those organizations, to simply ask the question, when was the last time that you vetted the technology? Have you ever seen this technology? Whether it's us or other providers, can you show us your work, right? Show us if it sounds like you're against equal access to voting independently and privately for voters living with disabilities. That's what it sounds like you are, because you've shown up in other states opposing this type of legislation and this type of technology. Okay, we respect that, but can we see the paperwork that you're so concerned about? Where are the reports? Where are the studies? Where is the research? Not from 10 years ago or 15 years ago, but where's the most recent research that you've done? Because you're certainly vocal enough and energetic enough to oppose equal access to voting privately and independently for voters living with disabilities. Okay, we can respect that to an extent, but it better be for a real reason. Can we see what your basis for opposing this technology is? And just have an open-ended question and see what they come back with. Because I can promise you they have not looked at this technology. They don't have the reports. They don't have the research. We certainly do, and we'll be happy to provide the levels of security. We have over 1,500 independent vetted cybersecurity researchers that are constantly testing this system. It's probably the most tested elections technology in U.S. elections history. And yet they may not know that over at Common Cause and the League. We would love to engage with them and have, a healthy discussion. It just feels like the bar should be pretty high if you are going to oppose legislation to extend equal access to voting. So that may be one way to engage with them, is just to ask the question, get them talking. That's just my little suggestion from running around the country here and encountering some of their opposition at the local level.
Great. Thank you, Brian. Appreciate that. And one of the things I've noticed is it really isn't a red and blue issue, is it? I mean, we have conservative states, red states, we have blue states that have accepted it and also opposed it. So, there's a real shot out there. So, there's a few minutes left. We sure appreciate the time. If there are any questions, fire away.
Say it loud, Shelley, so I can hear you, so I can repeat it. Okay, she'd like to know if the League of Women Voters has any blind or low vision members.
Yeah, me in New York. I'm the only one.
Okay, and Shelley, what was your second question? She'd like to know, what do we as Florida residents need to do to get an electronic submittable ballot?
Hi, this is Brian. So you would reach out to your local elections, county elections official, your supervisor of elections, and they would send you a link. And when you get that link, you'll click on that link, and you typically would put in, using your screen reader, so your home computer, and you would put in your first, last date of birth, and whatever other levels of credentials that the Supervisor of Elections provides to you to access your ballot. And then using your screen reader, you'd be able to access, mark, review your ballot. But in Florida for right now, they are going to require you to print your ballot and then mail it back to the local elections office.
Do you see any time that will change, that we don't have to print it and mail it out?
Well, that's certainly part of the conversation here today, is how to make that happen. And we, again, we would very much encourage you to reach out to your local representative. You know, democracy, it actually still can work, mm-hmm. meaning that they can hear, if they hear from mm-hmm. you, from their constituents, from the people, saying that this is an issue, and we want you to pass legislation to allow for us to electronically return our ballot. And you can ask your local representative, your local state senator or local representative, to ask them if they would introduce legislation in the coming legislative cycle to allow for voters living with disabilities who are print challenged to be able to electronically return their ballot.
Like if, the voter.
Excuse me, one second. Brian, if you have trouble, we have several bills that they can copy and shortcut writing the bill. And they like it when they don't have to write a bill than when it's already written for them. Who doesn't like to have their homework done for them? if you want the bill, if you need a bill or a copy of the bill in New York that we have several here, we can send you a copy. And you could hand it to them. So, and of course, we wrote it to your needs. I'm sure all of us, if we have one, we can send you it. So you can walk in. This is what I need to be done. This legislation, but adapted for Florida. Thank you.
I just like to add, as this is kind of titled about building bridges, I think it's really important for the, and I'm sure the Florida Council has relationships, but I would really, if they don't, to start reaching out to other disability groups that could also be impacted by this lack of processing or submitting, and so kind of forge coalitions with disability groups, because numbers speak.
This is nice. Katie, and I'd like to tell you that we are out of time now, and so much thanks goes to Charlie and Brian and the board for speaking with us today, giving us ways to move forward, and if we have questions, we will contact you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for spending the time with us.
Thanks.